Welcome to The Public Storyteller. My name is Michael Stock with Dr. Karen Neal. Karen is director of the South Florida Storytelling Project. Hi, Karen.
Hello, Michael.
Today is a special program. It is Veterans Day. What do we have planned?
This is an extended edition of The Public Storyteller, bringing together a number of stories on a similar theme. Coming Home, Listening to Our Troops. It's based on a project that I've been doing with South Florida veterans at the Stone of Hope Center in Hollywood. It is supported by a grant from the National Storytelling Network.
Was it difficult to get these veterans to open up?
It was not difficult at all. It's interesting. Studies show that people who have not served in the military have a positive feeling about veterans in general, but they don't really understand what veterans go through. And so the idea of this project was to allow veterans to really open up to the general public.
My name is Junior Telford, Specialist Telford, E4, with the Florida Army National Guard. And we was overseas, we was in Iraq for a year, and we deployed and left Florida about December 2002. About February, we made it in the country, in Jordan, and then from there, we were just waiting for the president to say go or not go. It was like before I went to Iraq, I was in school. I was on a high-paced track to finish college in like 3 years. Taking 8 classes a semester, 7 classes a semester. I was going to school at University of Miami, Florida Memorial University, Broward College in one semester. I would not go on vacations with the family because I was in school in the summer. I was so focused on graduating at a young age. A lot of African-American males weren't graduating from college. So I felt like I had to beat the odds. I was a straight-A student. And coming back home, I thought I was going to be able to get back into it, and it was tough. You know what I mean? My career has been put on hold. I was in Delta Airline Academy, and now I can't go to school because the FAA flagged me. Things have gotten to the point where my eye's twitching. My eye twitches. And I'm like, wow. Like, why is my eye twitching? And I was still in the Army part-time also, so dealing with them calling me up for hurricane duties at the time when all the Hurricane Wilma and all the Puerto Gorda stuff was going on, I was getting deployed left and right. At the same time, coming home from combat, trying to deal with issues, it just wasn't working, and I had to leave my job. And you're sensitive to a lot of things, the booms, 4th of July, I hate it. It's to the point where people can notice it because I have these slow-paced breakdowns every once in a while, and I think it's because I'm thinking too much. And then it's like, whoa, stop talking. I need to clear my mind. That's what I deal with, and that's what slows me down. Can't finish daily tasks on time, missing schedules. I can't stop certain things from coming. It's like when you drive down a car street, you're looking in front of you, you're paying attention to where you're going. When I'm driving down the street, I see everything. I see the guy walking through the grass. I see the bird that just landed. And I'm supposed to be paying attention to the lines on the street and the car in front of me. But my brain is just absorbing too much and I can't cut it, like, no more. It's like you're trained to see everything around you. Awareness is at its highest peak because you have to see things before it sees you. And you like to have the hand on the situation. So in our mind is, you have to see everything or you're putting your life in danger. if you could see everything quicker, it's like having a satellite up in the sky. If you can see before they see, you're going to always have the upper hand. But when you got to shut that switch off, how do you shut it off? My doctors used to always ask this question. What do you do to have fun? And that's been the hardest question to answer. I went through that where I just actually just stayed home in the back room watching TV, not being around people. Now you're getting the stresses of people telling you that they feel like you don't like them. But they don't realize this is, you're dealing with a lot of things. So not seeing your brothers, your sister, your friends and things like that, everybody thinks you don't care about them. It was just something to do at the time. You know, we were sitting down in the living room and I was like, I could do that. And I just went and did it. So I went fly planes and voila, I found a lot of other black pilots. You know, 9/11, all that happened. And I turned around and said, I didn't have to go. A lot of people backed out around the time the buildings got hit. But I said, you know what, I don't care. I'm not going to back down. I went and joined. When I was at the University of Miami, I was in the officer training corps. I didn't have to go to war. I had contracts right in front of me to sign that said, if you're in officer training during war, you're not deployable. They don't deploy training officers. I felt like that was a cowardly way out. I'll take the ride with my guys and I'll come back and then I'll deal with it afterwards. Shoot, I didn't even have to go to war.
My name is Marlon Ferdinand. I'm out of Miami Lake, Florida. Those in the military with me, they know me as Major Marlon Ferdinand. I am a 10-year veteran of the Air Force, 13 years prior enlisted Army. Currently, I'm out of Homestead Air Reserve Base, Florida. In 2008-2009, I was deployed to Bagram, Afghanistan. I was a clinical nurse. Prior in the Army, I was a combat medic, so I moved forward. Became a clinical nurse. I worked in the ICW. I was the officer in charge of the night shift. And quickly, I learned the unpredictable nature of what my patient load could be. We can have 5, we can have 10 patients. We can have good days where there's nothing, and those are the days that it snowed. Funny that when we talk about snow, we see that as something bad, but in this case, snow meant good. Snow meant quiet days in the hospital. Good weather, birds, butterflies meant death. I was also part of the Freedom Restoration Program, which was geared towards mental health, primarily towards young enlisted. We really don't know where we are until we're faced with such an unpredictable story, something so unfathomable is right before us. It'll spark something different in you. Another thing that I really had to smile about was the nature to which we've had to go everywhere with our weapon, bathroom, chow hall. They'll get upset with us if we didn't have our weapon. In the hospital, we'd come in, even at church. Church had racks of weapons under the seats everywhere, but everybody was giving thanks for another day of life. Everyone and anyone recognized that tomorrow meant something totally different from what it meant in homeland and states. It had a whole different, unpredictable nature that gave you immediate joy, made you enjoy those days, those moments. And of course, those who couldn't cope, you saw depression, you saw hurt, and we had to take on the job of being everyone's cousin, family, uncle, brother. I think it was pivotal that you recognize that you are your brother's keeper in an environment like that. One particularly stressful day, I had a 2-month-old baby, cleft palate. And of course, that's a whole different type of attention that's needed. But that day, I had an emergency trauma come to the ER, drop what I'm doing. I give report that I'm over there in the trauma team. 3 gentlemen come in. There was 6 of them total. They were ours, 2 soldiers, 1 airman, and 1 Afghanistan police. He lost both of his legs, and it was the first time that I seen it like that. It was really a television moment, but it was no time to be in awe and be melancholy. It was just time to act. It was really the wake-up call that made me realize I was in a combat zone and my mind had to stay in gear and combat ready at all times. I ended up with a patient that had blood coming out of his head, but I didn't know the nature until I unwrapped his band, and so he ended up losing an eye. He had shrapnel on his head, and it almost seemed to have cracked his skull. Well, it gave a split, almost like a Frankenstein effect. He did live. He suffered some memory loss in the short term, but I remember him coming to me as a patient, being slow to speak. I remember peeling the shrapnel off his face little by little, the scabs, the scars. I eventually gave him a haircut because he had one side with no hair, shaved because of the wounds. And I remember seeing the look on his face when he started to realize he had some of his looks again, that he couldn't bear to look at himself in the mirror. Now, keep in mind, I'm not even talking about an American soldier. I'm talking about an Afghanistan soldier, which over there was considered our ally. So it brings home the reality of we're just another human with flesh. They see things like we see things. They lose confidence and they have egos. They want to look good in the mirror. They're just like us. And it really took me for a spin because being from Trinidad myself, I found myself identifying with the culture, which made me even feel the human nature of them even more because, you know, you want to cut it off. You want to separate your mind. But it just didn't work like that for me. Some pulled it off, but that is not my nature. If I'm here to heal and conserve fighting strength, it comes with some compassion. It's hard to be someone who heals with an attitude and anger. It just doesn't go together. Everyone had to be a team player. Everyone was cooperative and very stressful because, of course, 1 hour after the other, maybe you sleep, maybe you did not. When I first got there, we had some good nights. It almost got me comfortable. But when the weather got better, when the hunger men, them came to eat.
My name is Master Sergeant Hugh H. Hood. I'm currently a member of the Florida Army National Guard. I work as a casualty assistance officer. In other words, it's my job to notify the next of kin or the loved ones of a soldier who's lost their life while on active duty. After coming back from annual training, I received a call from the Casualty Assistance Center at Fort Stewart, Georgia. I was informed that a young soldier had lost her life in Afghanistan at the hands of a coward who had thrown 5 grenades into a room, killing at least 9 soldiers. After being informed, I was told to go home, put on my uniform, my Class A uniform, and drive to this town, which is located outside of Fort Myers, Florida. I had to inform the next of kin that this young lady had lost her life. First person I met was the father. I informed him. After composing himself for a minute, he got on the phone. I asked him what was he doing. He was calling his other daughter. I asked him where was she. He said she was on the road driving back. I asked him to wait until she got there. After she'd gotten there, along with the mother, I had to give them the news. It took a while before everyone calmed down a bit, as you would understand. I made arrangements for all of the funeral processions, spoke with all of the politicians in the town, the police department, the fire department. The whole town was very, very supportive. I left, drove back to Fort Lauderdale, got an overnight bag, drove back to this town, picked up the family, went to the airport, drove to Dover, Maryland. This is where these soldiers who lost their lives in this incident all were flying into, and we were there to meet them when they came in. This was one of the hardest things I'd ever done in my life. While there, I was assigned to about 7 family members. There were 4 other families who was arriving there. They were also there to meet their loved ones who was coming back from Afghanistan. There was 1 casualty assistance officer assigned to each family. I not only had to witness the grief, the pain, and the sorrow of the family whom I was assigned to, I also had to witness the grief, the pain, and the sorrow of 4 other families. It was hard. It was very, very hard. Four or five family members lacking out, and we as casualty assistance officers were running around the tarmac at the time from one family member to another, trying to give what comfort we could. Comfort doesn't come easy. After everything, I had to continuously pursue them in order to make sure that they got all of the benefits that were entitled to them. Some of the benefits was the death gratuity, the SGLI, which is Soldiers Group Life Insurance, that amounted to about $400,000. There was counseling that the family sorely needed. They dodged me for a long time because this was so hurtful. I still stay in contact with this family today, and we're very, very close.
My name is Bobby White. I am the commander of the VFW Post 8195 in West Park. I grew up in the Miami-Dade area, currently living now in Miramar. I served in the 4th Infantry Division. I was in the United States Army from 1969 to 1971, and I served as a combat veteran. Right now, I am the executive director of the VFW Stone & Hope program, a program that helps veterans make their positive readjustment back into the mainstream of life. One of the things that veterans always ask me from this new generation of war veterans, they always ask the Vietnam veterans, you know, what are their stories? How did the war affect you? And what are some of the difference between those two different wars, the war in Vietnam and the current war now, and the war on terrorism? And how did you get through it? My family had a chance to see me when I first came back from Vietnam. I was living with my sisters and brothers and my mother and my father. All of us a big family. I had four sisters and one brother, and all of us lived in the same house, two-bedroom house right in Opa-locka here. They had a chance to see me wake up in the middle of the night looking for my weapon. They were the ones who were seeing me talking in my sleep and making sounds and making movement in my bed. So my mother would come to me, and I never forget, my mother would come to me and she would sit down beside my bed. She'd say, I see you kind of re-experiencing the dreams and the experiences that you went through in the war. Let me pray for you. That's what my mother said to me. Let me pray for you because I want you to be all right. She had recognized I had not made a complete adjustment back. She knew that I needed some time to deal with that, and I did too. The love and the support that we got from the family and the friends and the community wasn't enough for us to really work through all that PTSD that we was going through to deal with moving on with our lives. And one of the things that I did, I plunged myself into going to school. I went to school and got my two-year degree from Miami-Dade Community College, and then I got a bachelor's degree from FIU in psychology, and then I went and got a master's degree from St. Thomas University. I had to learn as much as I could about who was I and who I had become after the war. I had an opportunity to meet the Maharishi Moresh Yogi, and I met him at a time when I was really having a rough time. I saw a big sign on a wall at Miami-Dade Community College saying, reduce your stress, learn how to meditate, the Maharishi coming to town. So when I saw reduce your stress, that cued me in. So I wanted to see who was the guru. I didn't know what the guru was. The guru is supposed to be a man who's an enlightened man. It's like Jesus or somebody, a messiah. He's supposed to be a man who has raised his consciousness to the highest peak. Be in touch with God. So I said, let me check this out. And when he came to Miami, I went to the airport. When I saw that man walking through the airport, I thought he was gliding, walking down that terminal. He had on a long white robe, beads around his neck, long hair, about 5'5", brown-skinned Indian-type man with sandals on. And as he walked through the airport, he had a big smile on his face, and I knew that he had some kind of charismatic touch to him. So I followed him all the way out to the airport until he got to the limousine where he was going to Denneke Auditorium to make his big talk for that night. So before he got in the limousine, he started passing out little flowers to everybody, and I got one. That little flower I took from him, and that gave me enough wherewithal to go to listen to his talk. And when he was sitting on the stage at Denneke Auditorium, I was amazed. I was wondering, was the light shining on him, or was he the light? So it was amazing to me. And the place was packed. I gotta say this, I think I was the only brother in the audience. And the thing that really struck me was when he said, "There's more to you than waking, sleeping, and dreaming. There's a transcendental nature inside of you. There's a restful feel of pure awareness. There's a beauty beyond the senses. You must allow your attention to see that." And when a veteran comes to talk to me, they always say, "I can't sleep at night. I'm having nightmares. I'm having flashbacks. I'm having anxiety attacks." And when we look at the waking, the sleeping, and the dreaming states of consciousness, those are the states of mind that has become impaired. So when you start working on pulling those back together, you're bringing your whole completeness back together. And it took me all the way through my 32 years in the VA as a counselor and stabilized myself and helped me work through a lot of my PTSD. And that was one of the greatest things I thought that I could have done, to just move through a lot of hard times, emotional and mental and anxiety and all of those kinds of things, without subjecting myself to a whole lot of medication. And that was one of the things I was trying to avoid. So today, I'm still meditating. I've been doing that since 1977. And another good thing that happened to me is that I got a job working as the director of the Fort Lauderdale Vet Center, and I spent 32 years there, and it brought my whole life full circle, because I had a chance to use my intelligence, my experience, my education to help other veterans and to help myself.
My name is Carlos Renta, Sergeant of the U.S. Army, Operation Desert Shield, Desert Storm, and Liberation of Kuwait, and I was on the front line. Immediately after I returned from the Gulf War, I started to notice changes, lots of changes, in fact. It seems to be that I just could not stay away from trouble, and gladly, shortly after a year, from the Persian Gulf, I got out of the military. I requested, and it came granted. During this time, I developed what I call the Superman syndrome. I was invincible, I was indestructible, nothing happened to me. I was on total denial. When I came to Florida from New York, I was a chef for the Panthers, the Marlins, the Dolphins. I used to run the stadium, had a tremendous job. As a chef, my standards were extremely high. Very, very difficult to deal with me, because I was out of control. It was also took a toll on my family. After two marriages and working on the third one, I start also see the hurt that I was bringing to the people that were around me. No friends, just family, close family, and they were just afraid to be around me. It was terrible. Finally, I got diagnosed with PTSD. I finally accepted it. It was a long day for me, thinking, you know, what am I crazy now? You know, all these actions that I have done for these many years, they came to crash, and I was injured. I felt hopeless. I was in pain, but I was still out of control. I could control my thoughts. I could not control my anger, and it came to crash one night, one horrible night. Coming home from work one night in Kendall, my stepson was parked on my parking spot, and there were rules. In my house, there were always rules. And he was told not to park on my spot. Immediately, Mom got angry and agitated. She was frightening also. She went upstairs, tried to get Alan. And when they came down to get the car, they were arguing. I couldn't hear. That triggers me. And I just start swinging. It was unbelievable. I lost control. I have this anger inside of me that I could not control. And having four belts and martial arts, just figure how much damage I did. But I was not content with that. And that anger became rage. And that rage blinded me to the point that the voice of my wife screaming, "Stop! Stop! Don't hurt him! Hurt me!" And I dropped what I was doing. It was terrible. It was terrible. I lost control. I took it to another level. And I ran. I ran to the woods here in Florida, to the Everglades. And I spent a month there homeless, lonely, hungry, cold, wet. And after that, I was told that I have to report to the police, and I also ended up in jail. I can't describe. I wish I could find better words to say how bad I felt about the damage that I have done to my wife, to my kids, the only family that I knew. And then started going to all kinds of psychology, psychiatrists, all type of help on a daily basis, it seems to be. One day, my psychologist recommended me to do Transcendental Meditation, TM. Wow, I had hope. That was my first feeling. After I saw the tape of a veteran that also took TM, and he said it changed my life, so I thought this is my chance. This will change my life. And I went that day to my first meeting. There was a sign on the door that says, "Please, quiet, come in and take your shoes off." As I went through that door, I remember coming out that I told myself, this is the beginning of a new life. The change was felt after my first meditation. I was driving home 65 miles per hour was the speed limit. I was doing 50, 15 miles below. For me, that's new. And as I came to my house, and I saw my wife, I gave her a kiss. And for my surprise, she says that was the best kiss she ever got. I wake up every day with a new hope. I take 20 minutes of my life, two times a day, to meditate and feel myself. I'm not a monster. I'm back.
Stories from veterans from South Florida about their coming home. Karen, very moving stories.
Yeah, I've got to say it was a tremendously eye-opening experience, tremendously moving, and I sincerely feel honored that I had the opportunity to work with these veterans and to hear their stories. And I want to thank the National Storytelling Network for supporting this project with a Brimstone grant.
And a special thanks to co-producer Bobby White. The Public Storyteller is always looking for stories of South Florida. How can we get in touch with you to share our stories?
Send me an email at carenina@bellsouth.net. Give Michael a call at...
My number is 305-995-2264.
And check us out on our website, where you can hear archived stories, thepublicstoryteller.org.
Thank you, Karen.
Thanks very much, Michael.
Dr. Karen Neal is director of the South Florida Storytelling Project. My name is Michael Stock. The Public Storyteller returns next week.